Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now on to the episode. Hi, and welcome back to another episode with me, your host, Francesca. So in today's episode, I wanted to dedicate it to a talk about thyroid health. I've talked about thyroid health in previous episodes, but I thought that we could dedicate a whole episode to it because lots of women in their 40s start noticing changes in their body, as we know, as we've talked about, and they start to wonder, is this perimenopause or could it be my thyroid? If somebody understands the impact of, for example, the most common situation would be underactive thyroid or hypothyroidism and how that can sort of slow body processes, lead to symptoms like fatigue, low mood, hair loss, weight gain, and so on, then they may think, is it my thyroid? Is it perimenopause? Or maybe somebody's in perimenopause experiencing certain symptoms and they have actually no idea that their thyroid could be involved or that their thyroid health needs more attention as we move through perimenopause. So that's what I wanted to talk about today, because thyroid symptoms and perimenopause symptoms overlap massively. So as I said, things like fatigue, but also brain fog, weight gain, anxiety, sleep problems, thinning hair, the list goes on. A lot of these symptoms can be attributed to both things. Perimenopause is also a time, as I said, when thyroid problems begin to emerge, or when existing thyroid issues start to become more noticeable to us. But again, if we are unaware of that, then we're not, you know, we don't know that we need to be thinking about these things. So today I want to walk you through thyroid health in a way that's hopefully really easy to understand. I'll address how the thyroid works, why women are more prone to thyroid issues, and how it connects with hormones like progesterone, for example, during perimenopause. So let's just have a look at what the thyroid actually is. So it's a small butterfly-shaped gland. It sits at the front of your neck. So if you just imagine this small gland at the front of your neck in the shape of a butterfly, but despite it being small, it has a really big impact on how our body functions. Basically, because thyroid hormones, which is what your little butterfly-shaped gland is pumping out, they essentially regulate our metabolism, our entire system. So in other words, how our body produces and uses energy, which impacts everything. So your little thyroid gland produces two hormones, T4, also known as thyroxine. So if you know of anybody who's on thyroid hormone replacement, or you are yourself, that would be called thyroxine. So that's mostly a storage hormone. And then there's one called T3, triiodothyronine. You don't need to remember either of those names, T4 and T3. T3 is the most active hormone that the cells in the body actually use. So most of the hormone that your thyroid produces is this T4, thyroxine. But it then has to be converted once the thyroid has produced it and sent it into the system. It needs to be converted into the active T3, which happens in other parts of the body like the liver, the gut, the kidney. So whilst the thyroid gland does produce some T3, most of that is converted from the T4 that it produces inside the rest of the body. And that conversion from T4 into T3 depends on things like having good nutrient status in the body, healthy gut function, balanced blood sugar, manageable stress levels, good sleep. So straight away, you can see that thyroid health isn't just about the thyroid gland itself. It's actually connected to how the whole body works as well. So, you know, it's one thing that you have a gland that pumps out enough thyroid hormone, but we also need to have a body that's capable of efficiently converting that T4, that sort of storage hormone, into the active hormone T3, which does all the jobs. So it's not only about the thyroid gland itself. Another really important piece of the puzzle when it comes to thyroid issues is that women are far more likely to develop thyroid disorders than men. In fact, research shows that women are 5 to 8 times more likely than men to develop thyroid issues. And autoimmune thyroid conditions as well, like Hashimoto's, are especially common in women. And a lot of cases first appear during periods of hormonal transition. So after pregnancy, for example, during perimenopause, and in early postmenopause. So that's why this topic is so relevant as we move through our 40s, as we move through perimenopause and also postmenopause. So one of the biggest challenges is that thyroid issues, dysfunction, whatever you want to say, and perimenopause can look very similar, as I said at the beginning. So some of the symptoms that they share would be fatigue, low energy, brain fog, cognitive issues, anxiety, low mood, poor sleep, thinning hair, weight gain, muscle aches, digestive issues, particularly constipation, low libido, low zest for life, low motivation, and irregular or heavy painful periods. So when women start experiencing these symptoms in their 40s, of course, it's easy to chalk it all up to perimenopause. Oh, here we are, the dreaded perimenopause, I'm there. But sometimes the thyroid is playing a role too. One of the most interesting connections during perimenopause is the relationship between progesterone levels in the body and thyroid function. So during perimenopause, progesterone is usually the first hormone that starts to decline. And that would be anywhere from late 30s, early 40s, particularly always started to decline in early 40s, largely because ovulation becomes less regular or less robust. So we're starting to have more months that we haven't managed to ovulate, and therefore we aren't making progesterone that month at all. And other months we are managing to ovulate, but maybe not as robustly as before. So we are making progesterone, but not as much in that month. And progesterone actually has a really supportive effect on the thyroid function. So those healthy progesterone levels, for example, that we would probably have had in our 20s and earlier 30s, actually has a really supportive effect on thyroid function. But of course, as we then move into perimenopause and start producing less progesterone, that supportive benefit for thyroid just isn't there as much. And those healthy progesterone levels help to improve how sensitive our cells are in responding, how well they respond to thyroid hormones. So when progesterone drops, some women start to experience symptoms that feel really similar to low thyroid function, even if their thyroid levels are technically still within range because of the massive overlap between those symptoms. But the relationship also goes the other way. So when thyroid function is sluggish, so which, you know, this can happen at any age, that can start to affect the menstrual cycle and reduce the likelihood of ovulation. So even if we're talking about women in their 20s, in their 30s, you know, we want to be looking at thyroid health all the time, because if thyroid function is let's say, hypothyroidism, underactive thyroid, so it's not working as well as it should, then that can affect, like I said, the menstrual cycle, reduce the chances of ovulation. And we definitely don't want that in our younger years, because we should be making robust levels of progesterone at that time. But that, you know, obviously just becomes more important as we move through our 40s, because we have progesterone on the decline. And if it's so protective to thyroid function, then it's a time in our lives where we want to be checking on our thyroid health way more than we ever were before, or, you know, maybe we've never checked it. So I always get my clients, for example, when we first start working together, to get a thyroid test, or, you know, send me the results if they've had one recently, or we organize a test for them. And then make sure they're kind of doing that every year, at least as they move through their 40s and beyond, because it's just really important to check on it. So we'll talk about which markers to look at in a minute and what the optimal ranges should ideally be. So what can happen is we can end up in a bit of a feedback loop in perimenopause, where we've got lower progesterone, which is now contributing to poorer thyroid hormone utilization, basically, in the body. So it doesn't necessarily affect how much hormone your thyroid gland releases in the first place. It's more so impacting the conversion of that T4 into the active hormone T3, which we have to do in the body, and then potentially impacting how well those cells are using that T3. And then as part of the loop, we have lower thyroid function impacting ovulation and therefore impacting progesterone production. So that can amplify symptoms, of course, during perimenopause. Another big player is stress. So chronic stress can start to interfere with the conversion of T4 into that active hormone T3, very much shown to impact that conversion. And instead of making T3, what can actually happen if we are chronically stressed and not managing that is that the body can sometimes produce something called reverse T3 instead. So it can block the conversion of T4 to T3. That's one thing, but it can also do that plus produce this reverse T3, which is essentially an inactive form of the thyroid, active thyroid hormone T3. It's doing the opposite of what we want it to do. So it acts like a bit of a blocker. It prevents active thyroid hormone from doing its job, particularly at that cell level. And so we can end up with everything in reverse, the slowing down of our kind of body processes, our body systems, but that, you know, in that reverse way, which is not what we want. And that can leave us feeling tired, foggy, sluggish, even if our basic thyroid tests look so-called normal, because a basic thyroid test just isn't enough. Just looking at T4 and TSH is not enough, not enough information to tell us what's really going on. And when we layer this on top of perimenopause, where a lot of women are already juggling, you know, work, family responsibilities, sleep issues, hormonal fluctuations, the erratic nature of estrogen and that decline in progesterone, and the changes to cortisol as well and insulin, it's easy to see how thyroid function can become affected, because they're all interconnected and have a knock-on effect to each other. So while there's a lot of overlap, there's some clues that can point more strongly towards thyroid issues. So for example, if you're feeling cold all the time when other people aren't, if you have persistent constipation, or if you're becoming more prone to constipation, if you're experiencing puffiness or swelling in the face, very dry skin, thinning outer eyebrows, and fatigue that feels constant rather than just cyclical, these can point to thyroid. Now, obviously, dry skin, puffiness in the face, you know, these can all be in fatigue. These can be linked to other things as well. Low estrogen, for example, depending on where you are in perimenopause. But if you have like a few of these things together, it could point to thyroid for you. And because perimenopause symptoms tend to fluctuate more month to month, they're often linked to changes with your menstrual cycle. So for example, you might experience fatigue at different points in your cycle. You might experience puffiness at different points in your cycle, constipation at different points in your cycle. Whereas with the thyroid being the one of the underlying causes for these symptoms, it's more persistent than cyclical. But again, of course, these things can overlap. So it can be hard to pinpoint one thing or the other, which just highlights the importance of getting your thyroid tested at least once a year. And the first time you get it tested, using that as your sort of baseline, and then going from there each year, making sure it either stays where it is, or, you know, if it needed addressing, then you want to make sure it's improved next time. But you're just making sure that things aren't going backwards, basically. So one big issue when it comes to testing is that most standard thyroid tests, you know, usually only get tested for TSH and sometimes free T4. It is usually both of those things. Some GPs literally only do TSH, which is just insane to me, but a lot of them will do free T4 as well. But that's just two markers that we want to look at for thyroid. There's more. TSH, so that's thyroid stimulating hormone, is actually a signaling hormone from the brain. It's not a thyroid hormone itself. So it only gives us this small part of the picture. It tells the thyroid how much hormone to produce, but it doesn't tell us how much active hormone the body is actually using. It doesn't tell us how much hormone is being made. It's literally just, is the brain signaling, sending this signal down to the thyroid? So what we ideally want is a fuller thyroid picture, which would include the TSH, of course. And ideally, optimal ranges should be between 1.3 and 2 MIU per litre. Obviously, it depends. If you've had yours tested recently, you might be looking at your results, you might pause this, gone to find your results, and you may just check the unit that I've just mentioned, which is big IU per liter. Yours might be in a different unit, and then you'd probably want to convert it. There's some conversion calculators online to find out if you're within this range of 1.3 to 2 MIUs per liter. Bearing in mind, the range that I've just given you is an optimal range. So in the world of functional medicine, which is how I have, you know, the basis of how I've been trained as a nutritional therapist, we are looking at optimal reference ranges, which is functional health. So we're looking for, you know, optimum health, whereas reference ranges that your regular GP or the NHS is looking at, these are what's known as sort of conventional reference ranges, and they're much, much wider than the optimal reference ranges. So they're kind of looking for the absence of disease as opposed to looking for optimum health. So this is where a lot of people get told, oh, you're fine, you know, your iron's fine, your ferritin's fine, your B12's fine, what else? You know, your thyroid is fine. And then you're just left thinking, well, what on earth, why am I feeling this way then if everything's fine, if my blood work's all so fine? Because those reference ranges are much wider, looking for the absence of disease, not necessarily looking to make sure you would feel good. So using these optimal ranges is far more helpful for us. So like I said, TSH ideally between 1.3 and 2.0 miu per litre, 2. Free T4 you want to be looking at as well. That should be between 13 and 19 picomol per litre, 13 and 19. Free T3 ideally should be between 4.6 and 5.5 picomols per litre, picomols per litre that would look like. And then we have thyroid antibodies, which ideally should be tested as well. I would say more than ideally. If you were a client of mine, I would definitely want to be looking at your thyroid antibodies as well. So these are TPO and TG. So TPO stands for thyroid peroxidase antibodies. TG stands for thyroglobulin antibodies. But TPO and TG is all you'd really need to ask for, because thyroid antibodies can reveal autoimmune thyroid conditions like Hashimoto's years before TSH even becomes abnormal, which is, again, why simply being given a normal TSH in your blood work is not enough, because we can still have a sort of development of Hashimoto's autoimmune thyroid issues developing in the background that we're not picking up on. Because, you know, but had we looked at these thyroid antibodies at the time, we would see that that was developing in the background, and then we could nip it in the bud. So, so it's basically TSH, free T4, free T3, and the two thyroid antibodies. Ideally as well, where possible, this isn't as common, but so you could probably, you should be able to ask your regular GP for those five markers. It can be difficult to get them to agree to do the thyroid antibodies unless they see signs of autoimmunity elsewhere in the body, but it could be something that you could just try to ask for. You could also go privately for these, but the other one that you're probably not going to get from your NHS GP is reverse T3. You may have to go privately for a full thyroid panel. I sometimes use MediChex with my clients they'll go and get their bloods drawn. There is a finger prick test kit as well that they can do at home, which is obviously easier and cheaper. But if they have the budget for it and they can easily go and get their bloods drawn from various clinics that MediChex are linked to, I do find it more reliable. But the MediChex full thyroid panel does everything I've just mentioned, but it doesn't do reverse T3. For reverse T3, you may want to go via a lab like Genova Diagnostics, which you can actually only access through a practitioner like myself or another nutritional therapist or functional medicine practitioner. But reverse T3 is obviously good to get checked, because like I said, it's one thing to have, let's say we could have normal levels of T3 and T4, but if we have high levels of reverse T3, that can be pushing that free T3 into reverse, which is not what we want. So ideally it's good to get that tested, but I don't insist on that all the time. I think as long as we've got these five, that's quite helpful. The good news is that a lot of the foundations that support thyroid health will also support hormone health in general, your perimenopause experience, which is exactly what we want during perimenopause. We want to be able to support everything at once with the same sort of foundations, because, you know, there's so much to support and we just want to be able to have the right foundations in place that will support everything. And that's the beauty of working in this way and why I love the work that I do so much. So some of the most important foundations would be blood sugar balance, stress regulation, nervous system support, circadian rhythm, sleep support, and nutrient support. So we'll go through those now. So blood sugar balance, basically because blood sugar swings, so these highs and lows in glucose in the bloodstream, puts a stress on the body and can interfere with thyroid hormone conversion. So, you know, that's basically impacting that conversion of the T4 that our wonderful thyroid hormone gland is producing for us. But we do want that to be converted into active hormone T3, and blood sugar swings can put a bit of a halt on that. So in a nutshell, I've spoken about blood sugar balance a lot on previous episodes, but to keep this one shorter so we can get through all the little bits, in a nutshell, focus on eating plenty of protein with every meal, making it the star of every show. The star of the show with every meal. So at least 30 grams of protein with every meal, particularly breakfast, because most people are not getting any, if not, you know, a little bit, they're only getting a little bit of protein at breakfast, if any. And ideally eat breakfast within an hour of waking. That's been shown to be extremely supportive for blood sugar balancing and blood sugar hormones and hormones in general, in perimenopause, particularly for women. So 30 grams of protein with all your meals, fiber and healthy fats with all your meals as well. So plenty of colorful vegetables, maybe things like whole oats, brown rice, sweet potato, baby new potato, plenty of healthy fats as well. Lots of lovely extra virgin olive oil is probably one of my favorite good fats. A couple of tablespoons a day just put on top of your meals is wonderful. Avocados, olives, nuts, pumpkin seeds, sunflower seeds, flax seed, sesame seed, chia seed, coconut milk, coconut oil, coconut cream. There's lots of lovely places you can include that through the week. I like to do a protein smoothie in the week. That's my go-to breakfast. Some mornings I will eat like last night's dinner for breakfast, or I do a frittata. Usually on a Sunday, I'll make a big frittata with lots of eggs, and I might do some turkey mince in there or some smoked salmon or a mixture of both, whatever I've got, and throw it in. I'll put some sheep's feta cheese on top and then have that in the morning with a salad. That's usually about 40 grams of protein, because I figure out per portion how much protein I've got. Or I'll do the protein smoothie where I bung in some green leaves, flax seed, pumpkin seeds, sunflower seeds, coconut milk and some berries, and avoid long gaps without food, you know, especially if we're feeling depleted, which many women are as they move through perimenopause. The worst thing we can do is essentially fast for too long and allow our blood sugar to dip too low, and then stress hormones are increased and we're kind of running on adrenaline and cortisol and sort of fueling ourselves that way. And what we really want to be doing is avoiding that happening. So again, like I said, eating a protein-rich meal within an hour or so of waking, and then have your lunch maybe 4-ish hours later, dinner 4-ish or so hours later. Sometimes most women will need, me included, need a little mini meal or snack sort of in between lunch and dinner, because that gap's usually much longer than it would be between breakfast and lunch. And that could be something simple like a really good quality protein smoothie made at home. Or it could be, you know, any kind of snack. It could be something simple like a square of dark chocolate with some nuts, some walnuts and Brazil nuts, macadamias. These are my favorite ones for nutrition. Almonds. Or it could be something a little bit more substantial that you might need. You might have like literally a mini meal. So that's the kind of blood sugar piece. And then stress regulation, nervous system regulation. So this is where we really want to do things that help to calm our stress system and tell our brain that everything's fine, we're safe. And because chronic stress can suppress thyroid function and start to worsen all of those symptoms involved, have a knock-on impact to all other, you know, body processes and symptoms as well. So it could mean that we prioritize rest during the day, depending on your lifestyle, depending on where you work from. Do you work from home? If you work from an office, whatever, wherever it is you know, your lifestyle brings you on a day-to-day basis, finding ways to prioritize moments of downtime. It could be literal rest where you need to lie down. You might lie down and do a meditation. You might lie down and do a yoga nidra meditation, body scan meditation, which has been shown, even just 20 minutes, has been shown to be really impactful at bringing down the stress response. Or it could be that you're not in a position to be lying down in the, you know, middle of your day. So you would take yourself out into some sort of nature space and just sit and be and just listen, or have a walk, but do it mindfully. That is very helpful as well at calming the stress response. When the brain is looking around and seeing nature and taking it all in mindfully, that's been shown to decrease the stress response in the body. It could be reducing overly intense exercise when you feel exhausted. You know, are you forcing yourself to go to 3 boot camp classes a week, or 3 spin classes a week, or all these, you know, F45 training, or long distance running? If you're pushing your body to do things, you know, sort of beyond its tolerance levels for that particular week or month or even stage of life, then that can be really, you know, pushing that chronic stress response as well. Could it be incorporating calming practices like breath work? You know, simply, as I said, if you're at home, you have more freedom, I guess, to get into like a lying down position. Like I said, do some sort of yoga nidra. But if you're out and about, could you just stop somewhere and just sit for 3 to 5 minutes and focus on your breath? Focus on breathing into a count of 4 and out to a count of 6, feeling your belly rise and deflate as you go. Even just for 3 minutes, focusing on one spot, like in front of you, That has also been shown to bring down the stress response. So where can you find these little moments through the day to help give those calming signals to your brain? And then sleep and circadian rhythm, really, really foundational. Your thyroid and your hormone system, your endocrine system, they're strongly influenced by your circadian rhythm, your circadian clock. So simple habits like getting morning daylight exposure, really, really key. I've got separate episodes on the circadian rhythm and how we can support sleep and bring that rhythm back into play. So morning daylight exposure within at least within an hour of waking, if not before, if we can get out into natural daylight. Having consistent sleep times, consistent times that we go to bed, that we wake up the next day, and ideally sticking to that, you know, 7 days a week, give or take, say an hour or so here and there, but ideally within that range, that window, consistent window, and dimming the lights every evening. So having the daylight exposure in the morning and then having the opposite from about 7-8 o'clock in the evening, making sure that the lights are kept dim around the house. You know, if you need to go to the toilet, if you need to be in the kitchen, just making sure you're not using those really bright overhead lights, and you're, you know, even if you have to go and buy some new lamps or some red lights and things like that, or some sensor lights. I've got lots of different sensor lights in the bathrooms and in the kitchen as well in the evening that just come on a nice sort of red calm color. So you can still see what you're doing, but you're just not shoving this blue light into your eyes, which is basically telling the brain it's time to be awake. It's time to make cortisol. But you want the opposite of that in the evening. We want to be telling the brain it's time to wind down. It's actually time to start producing melatonin so that when you get into bed, you can have a deeper sleep, a more restorative sleep. So all of these things, these small habits, can make a really surprising difference. So if, for example, I was to be, you know, given a set of test results where underactive thyroid was at play, for example, these are the foundations that we would be working on together, one-to-one. We'd be focusing on, you know, obviously it's going to be different from person to person, whatever their lifestyle is, what particular foundational areas that they need to support more than, say, the next person. And then we would be looking to support it in different ways, in ways that work for them, because we're not all the same. We can't all do the same things. So it's a one-to-one personalized basis that we would do this. But of course, in my Midlife Thrive membership, we go through all of these foundations in much more detail. There's a module on every single foundation for each one. And you're working through that in your own time and then having the group calls to come together and troubleshoot and get coaching as a group together. So, okay, so that's, we've done blood sugar balance, stress regulation, sleep, circadian rhythm. And then the other sort of, there's the other one that's the main foundation as well, part of this four, is nutrients. So nutrient intake, nutrient support. So certain nutrients are particularly important for thyroid hormone production, and also, you know, for the production of T4 from the gland, but also for the conversion of T4 into active T4 so that it's active. So things like iodine, selenium, zinc, iron, vitamin D, B vitamins, magnesium, and having adequate protein coming in with every meal for the amino acid, particularly the amino acid tyrosine. So protein breaks down into multiple 20 different amino acids, one of those being tyrosine. And tyrosine is really important for the production of thyroid hormone and the conversion into T3. And during perimenopause, when nutrient demands actually increase, because the body is replacing, you know, the body, there's more demand being placed on the body as we move through this phase, just like in postpartum, puberty, menopause, for example. So we need to ensure, it's more important that we're ensuring good nutritional status now more than ever. So these can, you know, these nutrients can be supplemented. You can usually get some thyroid blends, which contain a few of the really important ones like iodine, selenium. Not everybody can do iodine. If one thing to caveat there is that if you do have Hashimoto's disease, for example, iodine might not be appropriate. It can still be appropriate for some, but you'd want to get proper advice for yourself on that. Be working with a practitioner like me, or, you know, another sort of nutritional therapist or functional medicine practitioner to really discuss whether iodine would be right for you or not, if indeed you do have raised thyroid antibodies. But things like zinc, selenium, you know, these are easy to supplement. Checking your iron levels is really important, because if that's low, definitely something you want to rectify. Getting your vitamin D tested as well, getting your B12 tested and your folate. Again, if these are low, it's really simple. You know, we can supplement with these and bring them back up and then retest a few months later and make sure they're nicely back up again. We can easily supplement with magnesium. My favorite form is glycinate. But of course, you know, if you feel that you do want to work with me on a one-to-one basis to go through this personalized to you, then of course, get in touch. The link is in the show notes to work with me one-to-one, or you can contact me on Instagram or drop me an email. So the final thing I really want to talk about after those four foundations is the connection with thyroid and your gut health. So gut health plays a really important role. Around 20% of your T4 is converted to the active hormone T3 in the gut. So if we don't have a well-functioning digestive system and, you know, healthy, flourishing microbiome, then that can start to influence this 20% conversion that happens, that should happen in the gut. So the gut is also central to immune regulation. So, you know, maybe you know this already, maybe you don't, but gut health is a foundational piece of immune health. All sort of autoimmune conditions will do benefit from some sort of gut repair program, you know, really looking at the function of this person's gut. If they have any what we call gut permeability, or what's also known as leaky gut, you know, healing the gut basically and sewing up those holes and making it strong, supporting the gut microbiome, making sure there's plenty of diversity of different strains of friendly bacteria. All of these things would be really, really impactful for anyone suffering with autoimmune conditions. And the same goes for Hashimoto's, thyroid autoimmunity. So there's connections with gut and thyroid, and we really do need to be, you know, focusing on gut health as well when we're talking any sort of conversation about thyroid health. So just to wrap things up then, if you're in your 40s, if you're experiencing symptoms like fatigue, brain fog, mood issues, weight gain, and thinning hair, it's completely reasonable to explore, of course, you know, to put it down to both perimenopause, but also thyroid function, and to start exploring thyroid function. I mean, I would say even if we're not necessarily suffering with these symptoms, if we're in our 40s, we really do want to be looking at thyroid health. You know, it's all about prevention as well. So I don't know about you, but I certainly want to just, you know, check on things and just make sure they're working well. And if they're not, I can intervene. And if they are, great. I'll check back again in 12 months, make sure it's all still going well, just to kind of safeguard my health now and in the future. But of course, if you're experiencing these symptoms, then you absolutely want to be going down the thyroid check route. So often the body is telling a bigger story about stress, about nutrient status, about metabolism, about hormonal changes, all interacting together when we're experiencing these symptoms. This is the body's signal to us, you know, something's going on here. There's a lot, and they're all interacting. And if we can put those foundational pieces in place, it has a really positive impact on everything. So whether that's nutrition, whether it's lifestyle changes, whether it's testing, whether it's working with a one-to-one with a practitioner like myself, then it's absolutely possible to support both your thyroid and your perimenopause experience as we move through our 40s. So like I said, if you'd like one-to-one support from me, the link to and the information is in the show notes. Same with the Midlife Thrive membership. The information for that is also in the show notes. And if you have any questions, drop them to me on email or via Instagram or Facebook or LinkedIn, wherever you find me. And I'd love to address those questions for you. And if there's anything in particular you'd like me to focus on, you know, in future episodes, any particular questions, any particular topics, please do let me know, because I would really love to respond to what it is you actually want when it comes to the episodes. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye. If you enjoyed this episode, come and join me inside the Midlife Thrive membership. It's where I share my best resources, deeper education and coaching support to help you navigate perimenopause and beyond with clarity and confidence. Head to francescaliparotti.com/midlife-thrive-membership or check the link in the show notes, and I'll look forward to welcoming you into the community.